Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of 3GT, Three Guys Theologizing, where three gentlemen like to get together and discuss things theologically and from a Reformed perspective. Now, as has become our custom, we go by the title 3GT, and it's been few and far between the opportunities three of us have gotten to sit down and record together. But today, we have all managed to put it in our schedule and meet together. So I am joined, not as always, but as should be, with my co-host, Kyle Borg, who is from Winchester, Kansas, preacher extraordinaire out there. How you doing, Kyle?
You know, Scott, I'm doing really well today. I appreciate your accolades. I'm certainly not a preacher extraordinaire, but I'm doing great, and what I appreciate, the enthusiasm with which you just started this podcast, I think is setting the right trajectory. I want to thank you for that. You did an excellent job, but I'm doing well. I'm so glad to be here today. Like you said, this is the way it should be, and I'm glad we're together for 3GT.
Thank you, Kyle. And Barry, Pastor Barry, Dr. Barry York, professor and president at Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, joins us as well. Barry, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. After just hearing all that syrupy talk from Kyle, I'm doing quite well. That was so sweet.
I know. It almost makes me sick, but it doesn't. It doesn't. So I'm glad. It's been way too long since we've been able to just sit down and chat together. And it's good to be back with you guys. And I look forward to discussing things today. And I kind of want to jump right into it. And we do like to deal with cultural issues from time to time, especially with respect to how it affects churches, how it affects Christians, and how we should respond. And I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but probably one of the most prevalent things that are going on in our culture today is the alphabet movement, the LGBTQ plus movement, and particularly transgender identity politics. And I know, Kyle, you're from the backwoods of Kansas, and which is probably a great place to be. You probably don't deal with transgender issues as much as, you know, somebody like Barry, who's in a metropolis like Pittsburgh. Marion, we have it some, but you know, it's becoming very prevalent. Barry, you provided a statistic, and I would love for you to share that statistic with us. But before we recorded, you provided that just about how prevalent it is, transgender identity issues are with Generation Z in particular.
Yeah, I just saw a statistic recently that identified or showed which Americans identified as LGBTQ by generation. So you have like the millennials and Generation X, Generation Z. Of course, Generation Z is the current generation from those born 1997 on. And in that generation, 20% of those young people are saying that they identify in that category. So that's 1 out of 5 of our young people identify in that category. It's quite an alarming statistic. I mean, Generation X, which one are you guys? Are you guys millennials? What are you?
I know what I am. I'm on the very front edge of the millennial generation.
Yeah, like 10%.
Why Scott finds me so endearing.
Yeah, that I'm a Gen Xer. So, you know, we kind of get overlooked a lot. I know you're a boomer, right, Barry?
Yeah, I'm a boomer. So millennials, 10%, Gen Xers, 4%, and us crusty old boomers are only like 2.5% would identify that way.
But there is a very famous boomer who works in the national government from your home state that would identify as a transgender.
There sure is.
Oh, yeah. There is.
But I think, you know, Scott, I do think you're right, though. You know, even with the alphabet issue, the LGBTQ, there is such a pronounced emphasis right now. It is almost surreal on the transgender issue. You know, you guys have interviewed me on this before, but I've been keeping up a kid's daily news podcast, the Daily Scoop. And every day when I search headlines, it's actually remarkable to see. And I know that news media, they need to be sensationalistic and, you know, they're going to be influenced by certain political leanings. But right, this is a huge issue. This is an issue in sports. This is an issue in government, in schools, in the media. And of course, everybody's heard of the recent blow up with Budweiser and even the way in which they do their ad campaigns. Transgender issues are dominant. You can't escape them. Even in rural America, you can't escape them altogether.
That's a very good point. I mean, it's infecting every area of our life. You can't turn on, you know, ESPN. You know, I know sometimes I like to watch sport just for escape a little bit, you know, say what you will, but you can't even watch sports anymore without being inundated with transgender ideology politics. And so really, I think the question that we need to ask is, as Christians and Reformed Christians, how should we handle this? How do we handle people who say that they are a guy when they're a girl, or, you know, say they're a girl when they're a guy, you know, like Barry's esteemed health person out in Washington, D.C. now. I know, not yours, but, you know, he is from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But how do we deal with that? And go ahead, Barry.
Oh, I was just going to say it's Rachel Levine, who I would probably refer to as Richard, but.
Well, his mom called him Richard. I'm going to call him Richard.
That's right. Right?
So I do want to kind of talk about this. How should we handle, I guess, talking with and identifying and referring to people who say they're transgender? And Rosaria Butterfield just wrote an article where she talks about repenting for how she has handled this in the past. And I think it was a wonderfully written article. She certainly confessed in the article to wrong beliefs on how to address transgender people and why we address it the way we do. So I just want to get this started by asking a very simple question. Is it a sin to be a transgender, to identify as a transgender person, and why?
Well, yes, it is a sin.
Crickets.
Because it's, I thought you were going a little different way on the question. So yes, I do believe it's a sin. Now, if I quote from Leviticus, probably Kyle will say it doesn't count because, you know, we try to, you know, use that argument with him about tattoos, and he just said, well, it's in Leviticus, so it doesn't count. But in Leviticus 22:5, a woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak. Whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. And that follows with other places where we see prohibition in the scripture to take our aspect of being made in the image of God, because he made both male and female in the image of God, and corrupting it through a perversion such as dressing in the wrong clothing for your gender or acting in ways inappropriate to that gender. So I do think it's a sin. How we deal with the sin, that was the part of what Rosaria was talking about. And earlier in her thinking, she had said that if people use certain pronouns or names and they were a man pretending to be a woman, she would just honor the usage of those names and pronouns, because she just saw it as a way to not create an immediate offense and interacting with them as she tried to bring the gospel to them. But as she has continued to think and reflect on that subject, she doesn't believe that's the proper approach, because once you start conceding, you start going down that road of concession toward something of that nature, where it's a clear violation of not only biblical law, but natural law, where do you stop? And it's obvious, as you guys are alluding to, this is coming out as strong and heavy and hard. And so we need to realize it's time to be the salt and light God's called us to be in our culture. And so how to handle the different scenarios that you find yourself in when confronted with these issues is going to be really important for us to do. And again, part of the reason why in this episode, we're going to try to offer at least a little bit of help, we hope.
Yeah. So I kind of want to jump off into how do we handle this and exploring why it is sinful. And I know Rosaria kind of details this in her article, but can we summarize why it would be sinful for a Christian to refer to somebody by their preferred pronouns, if it's she, if it's it, you know, why is it wrong for us to do that?
Well, I think, you know, and this is a very live issue for some people, you know, it's easy. And I assume I know this afternoon that we are all united in the way that we understand this and view this, but that's not universally true of all who would profess to be Christians. And there are people who I think are somewhat well-intentioned, you know, we've already made reference to Rosaria Butterfield, and she chose for a time to do that because she didn't want to create unnecessary offense. And of course, the message that Rosaria has spoken to people and the news that she has brought and those things, she has caused a tremendous amount of offense. And I think for her, well-intentioned as it was, but she recognized that was wrong. You know, you interact with other people, well-meaning Christians, and right, the transgender movement and the fluidity of identity and things like that is so pervasive. I remember reading one author, Abigail Schreier, who she's actually a more liberal leaning, but she cannot wrap her mind around the transgender movement. In that sense, she reminds me a lot of J.K. Rowling. But, you know, Abigail Schreier says, you know, what cutting was to the 80s and 90s and especially teenage girls, that is now what the transgender movement is. It is a bandwagon movement that is really being propagated by social media. But the reality then is that when we begin talking about transgendered people and people who are identifying their pronouns, for a lot of Christians, this intersects with their relationships. They have people who are dealing with this and wanting to be identified in this way. And I think, you know, sometimes the Christian church, sometimes we as Christians, we're two steps behind, and maybe we haven't been really well discipled in the way that we think about these things to be prepared for it. And I think a lot of well-intentioned Christians just kind of find themselves in a confusing place. Like, what do I do? Do I come so far with them so that I can keep a relational capital to speak the truth to them? Is it really harmful for me to use a preferred pronoun? After all, it's just a word, you know, whatever it is, does that inherently deny the dignity and the inherent value and worth of an individual who is created in the image of God? So I think a lot of well-intentioned Christians could easily come at this and want to say, you know, no harm, no foul. Let's use the preferred pronouns. But I think at its very most fundamental level, it's not truth, not truth. And as Christians, we are people of truth. We don't buy into the human cunning and the empty philosophies of today that there is no objective truth. We don't buy into that. We are a people who understand that God determines what reality is. God determines what truth is. God has revealed that in the face of Jesus Christ, who is the truth. And that has massive implications on this question. If you remember the way John Calvin opens up the Institutes, Calvin says, Scripture teaches us two great things. It teaches us a knowledge of God and a knowledge of self. And he actually goes on to say, you know, and which gets the priority is a really hard one to figure out. But right, God's truth communicates to us about our identity. It communicates to us who we are. And as Christians, our only loyalty and obligation is to be a people of the truth. And fundamentally, using preferred pronouns that are not grounded in reality, in God's truth, it would be a serious violation of truth for Christians to yield to that. And I think that can come out, you know, you can think about that among many different branches, so to speak. But I think the root of this is, what is true? And what does God say about our identity? And as Christians, that's where we need to stand.
And it's so important too, just following up with what Kyle is saying, because people get hurt when there isn't truth present. So he referred to this one author talking about how this is the new cutting movement. Well, it's very literally a cutting movement, because young people are getting mutilated. Like, their bodies are being cut up and carved out in order to try to take on this new identity that's not natural to who they are. And so it's serious. Like, this isn't fun and games. And we see the transgender regret that's taking place. We see the suicide rate that's vastly greater among transgender youth, for instance, than among normal teenagers, regular teenagers. And there's just all kinds of ways in which this is really hurting and harming people. And so there, it needs to be taken seriously, like Kyle is emphasizing here, because we're the ones that are going to have to do it, because we're Christians and we're called to stand for the truth. The church has to stand up in the face of this and, you know, say the emperor has no clothes. Like, we've got to show people that we're just not beholden to this ideology that's just being forced upon us everywhere we turn. I remember an article a while back by Kevin DeYoung where he said the world is catechizing us through this movement. Everywhere we turn, we're being faced with acceptance of this. And I remember reading that article, and then one day, right, same day or the next day, I'm pulling out of RPTS parking lot, which you don't do very quickly because there's so much traffic on Penn Avenue. And one of the city buses goes right in front of my face, and there's a big rainbow and, you know, love is love. And here on the city bus, this ideology is being promoted. And that's just one tiny example of what we're seeing all around us. And so I think there needs to be a real sense of urgency in how we address this as the church.
Yeah, I think a sense of urgency, absolutely. At the same time, I think one of the encouragements that I try to offer as a pastor and to my family and thinking about these things, in one sense, right, so Carl Truman observed in his book, The Rise and the Triumph of the Modern Self, where he deals with these identity issues. And he says, you know, if you had told my grandfather that today we would hear people say, I am a man trapped in a woman's body, or I am a woman trapped in a man's body, it would be nonsensical to him. And in one sense, that's true. That is the moral cascade of our culture and our society. What we are seeing and what we are experiencing in one sense is a modern phenomena, which shouldn't surprise us, because Romans 1 tells us that fallen humanity become inventors of evil. We create new ways to be evil. At the same time, especially when you ground this in a biblical concept of truth, it is just the ancient error of sin. You know, the Apostle Paul, also in Romans chapter 1, tells us this is what humanity does. The wrath of God is being revealed. Why? Because humanity has exchanged the truth of God for a lie. Humanity has chosen to worship the creature rather than the creator. And the transgender movement is just one more way to worship the creature, to put the creature and the desires and the passions and the ideas and the senses and emotions and whatever it is front and center, and then to use that to determine what reality is. It is nothing but the ancient substitution of the truth for a lie. But the church does need to feel an urgency about this, because it is, you know, in principle, it's wrong. Like Barry's saying, the consequences of this are devastating, which is somewhat of a different, if I can, it almost sounds somewhat of a different argument. Back when same-sex marriage began to be legislated, you often heard, well, it doesn't hurt anybody. Well, as Christians, we know it hurts people. It's morally reprehensible, and it's going to bring the wrath of God. But on an issue like this, I think we even see more obvious indications of the consequences of how serious this is. It is doing irreversible damage, especially to our young people and our children.
So one of the arguments I think that are made for taking an opposite position, a different position, and I'm certainly not espousing it, but because I don't agree with it, but this idea that, well, we need to love people. God tells us to be a people of love. And it's not loving if we don't address them how they want to be addressed, and to engage them in the way that they want to be engaged. How do we respond to that argument?
Well, I think we need to remember, so if we bring it back to this whole concept of truth, truth is interwoven in law, right? So the ninth commandment, you shall not bear false witness. But the law and truth and all of these things, these are also wrapped up very closely in a biblical concept of love by my book, What is Love? There we go. Shameless self-promotion. But all of these things are wrapped up in, right? You can't define true love apart from the truth. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 13 tells us that love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It rejoices in the truth. And as Christians, Scott, I think you're right. That's the argument you hear. And it's such a deficient understanding and definition of what love is. True love does not rejoice in wrongdoing. It rejoices only in that which is true. And so we have to bring it back again to the truth of God's word.
Barry, do you have anything to add? I appreciated what Kyle had to say, but do you have anything to add to that?
It's really hard to follow the loveologist. You know, when the loveologist
spoke,
and you just have to, just sit there and drink it in.
I appreciate the encouragement, you guys. Barry, from you, but especially from you, Scott. Thanks.
Yes. Well, I'm not anything if I'm not encouraging to you, Kyle. Just reciprocating, that encouragement I received from you. You got me off my game just a little bit with that compliment, or that nicety, that sweetness. I wasn't ready for that. When we treat people like, when we talk to these transgender people, identify as transgender people as their preferred pronouns, and we're not speaking the truth. I mean, we're not really loving them, right? I mean, love requires us to tell them exactly who they are. There's a loving way to do that. There's a kind and gentle way to do that, but it's not loving to perpetuate a lie. Right. I mean, that's at the bottom of all this, it's not loving to do that.
Yes, I agree. And again, the wisdom that we need in any given circumstance, like there could be circumstances where the person we've been very knowledgeable of, the office mate who is a guy and then one day just walks in as a woman. That's one issue. There's other times where there might be more of a discovery of that. Like, you didn't even realize this person. I was at Lowe's the other day, and those little booths they have where the cashier's out in the garden center. And I walked in and there was a nice lady that greeted us. And then we went in, Miriam and I, and we were doing our business. And I got out before she did. And I'm standing there and there's a lady in there. And at first I thought it was the original lady, but it was actually someone who had changed station with her. But she had the same, I should say, he had the same hair coloring, because after a moment, I realized not only is that not the same person, but this is a guy dressed up like a gal. And so sometimes you just aren't even aware of what's going on around you until there's more realization about it.
Yeah. And I think, right there is an example. I think as a pastor, as a friend, I know people that I'm close to experience this in even maybe more personal ways. I know people who are in charge of hiring for their company, and they'll have transgender people that apply for that job. That can easily throw them into the big questions. Like, how do I do this? Like, how do I relate to somebody like this? Is it wrong of me as a Christian to even bring them on? What do I do? I actually have a friend who owns a business and found out after quite some time of working with one of their coworkers that this person was transgendered. And this friend just kind of expressed some dismay and confusion. I've only known this person as a man. That's how they were introduced to me. That's how I under. And now I've learned biologically they're a woman. Like, what do I do? I've been relating to this person in the workplace for over a year. Do I now suddenly do a quick 180 turn and let them know, change my pronouns and things like that? Very, very real issues that Christians are dealing with. In ways that could very drastically impact their lives.
How did you counsel them, Scott or Kyle? Like, what counsel did you give?
Yeah, Scott, how did you counsel them? So
I told them to go talk to their pastor or their friend.
me too. So I think, some of the same things that we're saying here that, we do need to stand on truth. In a workplace, and I do think this is going to be an area where Christians, unfortunately, or maybe it'll be for, it'll definitely be for our sanctity. And so in that sense, it'll be for our good. We are going to need to learn And it's easy as a pastor for whom the collateral damage is not going to happen the way it does for people who have jobs. We are going to need to learn what it is to suffer with Christ outside of the camp and to bear the cross. And, you know, one of the things that I've tried to communicate, whether with success or clearly or not, is, you know, in a case like a workplace, there might be the reality that you need to think of getting a job somewhere else if this really conflicts with your conscience. If there is a way to relate to that person, avoiding some of the use of these things, you know, maybe that is an appropriate way to do it too, to not use pronouns, but also to use no pronouns. I don't think that's unchristianly. I think that might actually be prudent in a day of tremendous darkness. You know, and then grounding it in some of the things that we're talking about here, that we have to be people of truth, and truth is inevitably it's going to cost us. And I think for some vocations, for some jobs, that's going to be infinitely harder. Kyle's hot take: you could not pay me money to go into the health or the education world right now. My own father-in-law was the public relations guy for the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Worked his whole career to get up there, and all the transgender stuff started infiltrating it. And as a Christian, I can't do that. Like, I cannot get on board with this. And he went into early retirement, and that was part of the reason. And there are going to be certain jobs that I think are going to be consistently hard to hold as a Christian. And we really need to think about that. We need to prepare our young people for that.
Yeah. One of my daughters is in the healthcare industry, and she and the staff have gotten surprised several times trying to treat someone thinking that it was one sex. And then, you know, as articles of clothing were removed, realizing they were dealing with a whole different person, which can actually affect your medical care. And so again, you have to, when you're confronted with the truth, then I think you need to deal truthfully with the situation. I think we're all going to have to think of ways in which we might be more proactive and protecting. Like I know we're not out in the world. It's so different for businessmen who are out in the world more. But at RPTS, we now have a statement on human sexuality that everyone associated with the seminary from top down, our students all have to sign, and it gives us the right if we find that people are violating those standards, that they could be removed. You know how that would stand up in court? I have no idea, but at least the statement's there. I think Christian businessmen and others may have to think of this. People who own rental properties, it may, you know, there's so much of this that's connected to government funding. Schools, like we've had to pull out of one of the government-funded loaning programs just because this stuff was starting to come down the pipeline. And it's cost us at RPTS because right now the current administration has linked this together with a GI Bill. So because we got out of Title IV, we can't accept the GI Bill anymore. And we have quite a number of soldiers, military personnel that have come to RPTS. And that's a huge thing to take away from them, the GI Bill, because it not only provides tuition, but monthly funding and housing tied in with it. So it's been a huge benefit to us in the past. But because of these issues, we've had to back away from it. And we just have to trust the Lord will provide in other ways.
So, I mean, and we've been rather practical with this already, but, you know, how... Any advice, you know, Barry, you mentioned your daughter who's in the health field industry, and Kyle, you mentioned this friend of yours who's dealing with this person that, you know, came to find out was a completely different sex than what he had thought. How do we have practical advice for addressing people that we just don't know? I mean, transgenderism is so pervasive now, at least in some parts of the country. And I imagine, Kyle, all joking aside, you're dealing with it in some regard in Kansas as well. You know, and it almost seems funny, but when you deal with somebody you just don't know, you know, they have a name tag with like Randy on it, or, you know, and you just can't tell. How should we handle those kind of situations now?
Well, I think, if you don't mind, Scott, I think I would take one step back and say, I think we got to handle the ones that we do know well first.
Sure.
So I know in Rosaria's article, she referenced a story, and actually I know someone close to me that's dealing with the same, where one of your children who grew up who is a certain mm-hmm. sex and obviously was trained that way, rejects that, rebels against the parents' teaching, and goes into the transgender movement. And I know the family that I'm knowledgeable of, they will not use that name or those pronouns for their child, because they want to keep calling the child back to the person that they raised that child to be. And I remember Rosaria shared an anecdote in her article where there was a church that had a young person go into the transgender movement, kept loving this, I can't remember which sex it was, kept loving this child of the congregation, but refused to use those pronouns and names. And ultimately, God used that in this person's life to draw them back to Christ and back to their true identity. And I think that's at least a place to start. We've got to handle the situations that are right here. Because then I think if we can understand how to do that, then when we're confronted with it, when it's a further step or two away, it'll help us to know what to do.
Sure. Hey, and I appreciate that. I was just cognizant of the time and I think you're right. You know, we do have to handle what we know well first, right? And you know, the point is that this is it's a tricky situation. I think Kyle, you said it right. It's going to affect the church, and I do think that it's going to cause some persecution to the church, and we need to make sure we're handling it well.
We do, and in that, maybe just we have to be prepared for it, right? There has to be a settled complacency. And again, I know it's a little different to say this as a pastor, because my livelihood in one sense is not yet on the line for this. But the author of Hebrews tells us that we need to suffer outside of the camp with Christ Jesus. And, you know, one of the reasons why we as a culture are probably where we are is because of a significant amount of compromise. And we will need to learn to not love this world. And I think this could be a means that God is using. It's a crowbar to pry our hearts off of an inordinate love for the world, for its accolades, for its jobs, for its economy. And Christians are really going to need to learn to be content with that. And even beyond content, to rejoice that we're being counted worthy to suffer for the sake of Christ. But that at the end of the day is what it is, right? It is going to be persecution. And it's going to be suffering for the sake of those things that we confess as Christians.
Yeah. And Kyle, lest you think that you guys are going to get off easy, pastors, you know, you can see what's happening in Europe right now. And even Canada, you know, pastors who are preaching the truth are getting arrested. They're being persecuted too. So, I say this to mean that pastors need to be faithful in the face of this as well. They need to preach the truth to their congregation. This is something that the lay person is likely facing more intensely now than the pastor is. But, you know, if the past is any indication of what the future is going to be, they're going to come after the pastors, because, you know, Satan doesn't like competition. They don't want to have just a seat at the table. They want the whole table. And they, you know, this movement is willing to shut people up who speak the truth against what they're doing. And the pastors should be the ones most vocally preaching against the transgender movement. And as they do that, there is going to be backlash against pastors too. So, I mean, it's coming to the pulpit. Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. And I think too, that we're going to have to, as a pastor, often our job is to breathe that spirit into the congregation, so to help equip and prepare them. So I've seen recently some parents going up to school boards and taking the materials that they're finding in their school libraries, or the policies that are being invoked, or the seminars that are being held without their notice, and reading the perversity out loud back to the school board, and, you know, putting it back on them. And so I think we're going to all have to get involved at the flashpoints. It's one thing, you know, to, again, your office mate walks in one day and they're a different gender, It's another thing to see where this is being shoved down our throats and trying to stand publicly against it. And I think we've got to encourage our people to be involved in those ways and to be diligent out there in their communities, because they're coming after your children. I mean, when you just keep seeing these videos of drag queens, why do they want to read these books to young children? And again, I'm not saying every transgender person's like that, but I'm talking about, you know, behind this ideology is that they want control over our children. They want to groom them and open them up to this perversity. And we can't, as parents, we can't allow that to happen. And so we're going to have to be really diligent.
Yeah. Well, we are at the end of our time. We've gone over just a little bit, but, you know, I do think this is such a valuable topic that the church needs to get in front of. And to be salt and light and even be willing to be persecuted for their stance on the truth. And hopefully it's been helpful to our listeners because, you know, this is coming. And no matter where you are, you're going to be facing this sooner or later. So it's good to know what we need to do and where we need to stand and who we need to stand with. So I appreciate the conversation. We appreciate you listeners for joining us today on 3GT. We love hearing from you, your insights, your feedback, your thoughts, even your suggested topics. We love that. We do enjoy meeting with you when we can, all three of us, and we look forward to joining you again on 3GT.
And before we sign off, Scott, I want you and all of our listeners to know that more than appreciating this podcast and all of our listeners, I appreciate you.
Thank you, Kyle.